coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK, the internet radio of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England. I'm your host, Jamie Krieger. I am pastor of Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. At Resurrection, we have adult Bible study at 10 a.m. every Sunday while the children are in Sunday school. At 11 a.m., we gather for the Divine Service with Holy Communion. For more information about our congregation, go to resurrectionlutheran.org.uk. I'm also pastor of the Oxford Lutheran Mission. Pastor Tapani Simeoki and myself take turns to meet with the congregation there at 4:30 in the afternoon at St. Michael's and All Angels every second and fourth Sunday of the month. For more information about this, go to oxfordlutheran.co.uk. If you are nowhere near these congregations, go to lutheran.co.uk. This is the website of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, and it has information about all our congregations in England, Wales, and Scotland. I am also manager of Lutheran Radio UK. I hope you enjoy listening to our programs as much as we enjoy producing them for you. Find our entire schedule and the podcasts of all our programs at lutheranradio.co.uk. This coming Sunday is the 24th Sunday after Pentecost, or the first before the last Sunday of the church year. And the readings are Zephaniah chapter 1, verses 7 through 16, the Psalm is 90, the first 12 verses, the epistle lesson is from Paul's first letter to the Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 1 through 11, and the gospel lesson is from Matthew 25, verses 14 through 30. Welcome back once again, David Weber.
Well, we're coming near to the end of the church year, and I know I've repeated my wonder at this several times. The church year has alerted me to the importance of calendars in our lives. And calendars have been an important way of organizing time from the time that we have recorded history. And the interesting thing about the church year is that it tries to keep us in touch with the movement of time by using texts and festivals. So obviously what we're doing here is that the part of the calendar that's associated with the text, we're trying to move with the church year. And especially coming to the end of the church year, as in the Northern Hemisphere, it happens during the winter time with life beginning to recede and the march of death seeming to take hold. And in these texts, the texts are trying to get us in touch with time, and it's not sure whether time is moving towards a celebration or towards an examination. Two very different ways of experiencing time. The difference between springtime and wintertime. Each of those seasons has the same amount of time, but the experience is very different. So coming to the end of the church here, The texts are going to be focusing on time that is less a celebration and more a preparation for an examination, which really does concentrate the mind. So in Matthew 25, Jesus has the phrase, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's time unfolding will lead to this artful description of the mixture of sorrow and anger. What is it about time that makes us sad and makes us angry? I think that to answer it would be too facile. I think that there's a lot of things, but we do know that the movement of time produces weeping and gnashing of teeth, which captures the sense that life at some deep level is disappointing, that we have aspirations for life that the movement of time finally destroys and crushes. And so the movement of time towards disappointment is not the way that we want to experience time. We want at time to move in such a way that life improves. Like in this passage, like a good investment. We would like to make an investment, and over time we would like to see the investment grow, where that is an image of what we expect time to do. And when it does the opposite, when it just stays still or goes backwards, we think that there is something wrong with time. And what we discover is that time seems to slowly chisel away all the things that we cherish. The movement of time, it seems, takes everything good away. And so Jesus again gives us a parable, a fictional story thrown alongside of the sorrow and anger that time creates in order for us to live differently in time, not with weeping and gnashing of teeth, but with the joy and celebration of, in God's presence. That's a tall order. And so we have, again, another parable to help us come to that understanding. I think the key is the compliment that Jesus, that the landowner pays to his faithful servants. And he says this, "You have been faithful over little. I will set you over much." So in this parable, at its best, for these slaves, even when life is at its best, it is comparatively a little thing. You have been faithful over little. That's what God says to us. Our life at its best in this world is only a small amount of the life that we have the potential to live. And we know this. If we can imagine our lives when they were at their best and fullest, we know that we could imagine those lives being even better and fuller by lasting longer and never ending. You see, we are always wishing for a better life than we have. And that can be bitter, but it can also be give us the understanding that at its best, this life is no more than a glimpse or a foretaste of a whiff of a life that will meet our desires. And that kind of takes the pressure off of life. It no longer has to live up to some huge expectation. The expectation is lying in the future. Does this idea of life as a glimpse or a foretaste, as a whiff, diminish the importance of this life? That is the accusation that many secularists say, that when you look forward to heaven, you don't pay attention to earth. And here the parable says it's just the opposite. That during this time of little, we are preparing to be faithful over much. So during this time of little, we are learning the grand lesson of what it means to be faithful. And that does not diminish life, that enhances it. Is a meal diminished by the fact that we are drawn to it by the smell of it? That when the smell draws us to the better meal, does that diminish the importance of the smell? No. It prepares us. It begins to build momentum. That if life really is a feast, then we can expect in this life that we will catch whiffs and glimpses and foretastes of that feast, and that does not diminish our desire. That actually enhances it and makes us desire a satisfaction that if we were deprived of that satisfaction, it would cause weeping and gnashing of our teeth. It would cause a deep sadness and anger to be deprived of that goodness. So Jesus is preparing us to recognize that this world's passing is sad and it's angering, but it's not the worst thing that can happen. The worst thing that could happen is if the passing of this world is the end of life rather than the beginning of a new life. And so the psalm, in one of the most famous passages of the psalm, says, "Instruct us to count our days rightly." The psalmist is looking to God to give him an understanding of how he should understand the movement of time the counting of days. In the psalm, there is a question that's implied. What is the purpose of time? And the answer is, we are given the gift of time so that we might come to know the truth. Notice how we speak of knowing. It's coming to know. In other words, it is a process that is moving, and all moving processes need time. But we also know that living in time, the passing of time, can cause weeping and gnashing of teeth. So the psalmist says that if somehow God could instruct him, he could have a better relationship with time, that time would fulfill its purpose. And when we are made sad and angry by time, it means that we are at odds with time. Now, what we have to understand is this psalm was written after Israel experienced an unspecified disaster. We don't know what it was, but we do know that it forced the nation to face the limitations of the human condition. Of course, all of us want to make believe that as time moves, things get better. And there's nothing like a disaster to get us to recognize just all of the various frightful and sad possibilities that time brings to us. The psalmist said that in suffering this disaster, his life felt like he was a plant that sprouts in the morning, and then by evening it withers and dies. So in other words, experiencing the disaster made him question why life was to be lived at all. It just, a overwhelming sense of sadness and futility marked and characterized his life. But he also knows in praying to God that there is an alternative, because as he calls God, God is forever and forever. So in other words, yes, we are governed by time, and time moves in this way that can make us sad and angry, but God is outside of time. And if somehow God could communicate to us, if God could be present among us, our experience of time would be changed. And the psalmist says it would be like in the morning being sated with God's kindness, and being sated with that kindness, that would displace our weeping and gnashing of teeth and replace it with singing and rejoicing all our days. So the psalmist does not think it's too much to ask God to change our experience of time by being present among us. Now, Zephaniah is a very dark passage, and I particularly like the one word, hush, that God speaks to those who are suffering the effects of time. Now, when we have something to look forward to, that changes our experience of time for the better. If you remember in being children, how Christmas and birthdays, with those events, time could not pass fast enough to get to that desired day in the future. Now, in this passage, the nearing day of the Lord is not clearly desirable, and it's not clearly terrible. In fact, there's a play on words here. For the Lord has readied a slaughter and has invited his guests. At this point, a slaughter means a feast. But in the next verse, slaughter does not mean feast. It is the day of reckoning, which is forbidden. So how do we live in a world where time can either be leading us to a feast or leading us to a terrible end? God's command is hush. Zephaniah says, hush before the Lord. It is in that quiet that we come to know the difference between time that is awesome and time that is awful. The difference is, says Zephaniah, those who think that God is irrelevant, The Lord, they say the Lord does neither good nor evil. They will face their future on their own without any hope of rescue from the outside. And Zephaniah predicts that the way that time will work in their lives is to produce weeping and gnashing teeth. Hush is God's alternative to the sadness and anger that is caused by a world that is falling apart. Hush expresses the difference that God's presence makes. Hush means that we are free to wait, and free to wait in joy and anticipation, like waiting for our birthday or waiting for Christmas. Why? Because the day of the Lord is drawing near, and that day will be awesome. And now we get to Thessalonians, and I have been increasingly amazed at the importance that Paul gives to the movement of time. All through his writings, time and our relationship to time is one of the main ways that we experience God's grace in our lives. And Paul makes it quite clear. God has not destined us for wrath. So in other words, the future, the destiny, Paul thinks that the natural movement of time will simply make people angry, but that is not the destiny that God has for us. God's grace will change how we experience the movement of time so that it isn't something that generates fear, but actually generates a desire for time to run its course. We fear that time is moving like the seasons, that will suddenly stop with the winter of our discontent. In the fictional land of Narnia, the reign of the evil white witch made it so it was always winter and never Christmas. When time is simply the name of the process that kills life, time is the cause of sadness and anger. It makes us feel as if we're being robbed of our desired peace and security. Time is threatening, like a thief who steals our peace while they steal our stuff while we sleep. An even worse image of being at odds with time is Paul's view that it's like labor pains, only you don't give birth to a baby, you give birth to a stillborn child. Time has all of the pain without any of the joy. So Paul is trying to get us to giving us image to understand why is it that there is so much sadness and anger that is produced by the movement of time. And Paul recognizes, and I think he's reporting on the surprise of his own experience, that somehow God's presence gave him a deeper appreciation for how time moves, not in a way that is wrath-making, but in a way that is life-giving. That Paul recognized that the secret of enjoyment was recognizing how time would reveal the salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, that sounds somewhat cliche. It sounds like a nice thing to say, but Paul is deeply convinced that God's presence really does change something which seems to be unalterable. That is the movement of time. And he recognizes that once God gives us this grace, time is not our possession that is slowly being stolen from us. It is a gift by which we come to know God in all of his goodness. So once again, the calendar that is bringing us ever closer to the end of the church year and then Advent and Christmas is trying to keep us in touch with an understanding of time in which time is enjoyed rather than endured.
Thank you once again, David. This is as much as we can do today. I pray this has been very useful to our listeners. Just reminding our listeners that the podcasts of this program, Worth Doing Badly, are available online on our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app for mobile phones. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the one that is right for you to listen to us on the go. David, once again, thank you very much. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.